Well, hello everyone. Welcome to this webinar brought to you by the ICMA Coaching Program. It's on the very important topic of retooling local government culture and to have it be suitable for the 21st century and the challenges that are faced by local agencies in delivering in this environment. We're delighted that there are 20 ICMA State Association coaching partners that participate with us in identifying topics like this, identifying wonderful presenters as we have today, to share their insights and experience with you. And we also have the benefit of 9 outreach partners that seek to help us engage a diverse audience and to reach as broad a spectrum of the profession as possible, including people who are thinking about entering this profession. We have many MPA programs that use these webinars as part of their MPA curriculum. So we're delighted to have everyone's participation in helping this be successful. We've got a critical topic here because the whole challenge is how in today's very tight labor market do we attract, develop, and retain top talent when there's so much competition for that talent? And then how do we do that in a way that works in an environment where there's a lot of competition for resources, there's a lot of pressure for greater performance? So this webinar is all about how various agencies and various approaches are successful in navigating those challenges. So I'm so pleased that we have outstanding presenters to share with you what they've proven to be successful in their circumstances and what they've endeavored in our preparation for this webinar to identify as key takeaways that can work for you, whether you're in a large agency or a small agency, rural or urban. They're seeking to give you some insights that you can take away and apply in clear, straightforward checklists and other resources that will help you get going wherever you are in your path to retool and enhance your workplace culture. So we're going to begin with Jay Stegmaier. Jay was the county administrative officer in Chesterfield County, Virginia. He was there for 9 years. He led, and that was during the real crucible of the Great Recession. So he's going to share with you how in that time they not only dealt with the recession, but they enabled a stronger culture of performance and engagement among their employees to succeed. And Jay brings a great background with a master's in public administration from the University of Virginia, and he's now the executive manager with the Berkeley Group, providing services to local government agencies. We're then going to turn to Fran Robustelli, and Fran is the assistant city manager in Walnut Creek, California. And she's got a great story about what is probably the bane of everyone's existence in any organization, public or private, which is the doggone performance evaluations that just really bother the heck out of both managers and employees whenever they occur. She's going to share with you an example of how they turned that around in Walnut Creek and moved to a model of coaching and how that really has boosted engagement and boosted performance for them over the traditional model. And she'll help you navigate, you know, all the things that are coming in your mind about why you couldn't do that in your agency. And then we're going to turn, and Fran has a great background in her experience prior to Walnut Creek, was also in the city of Hayward. She has a master's in public affairs from the University of Missouri. So lots of expertise to share with you. Then we're going to turn to Mike Sable, coming to us from Minnesota. Mike has been in a number of agencies, city and county, in Minnesota. He was last the director of facility services in Hennepin County. He's going to share with you a high-performance organization model, how that works culturally and performance-wise. He has an MBA. And he's now just joined the faculty of the ICMA's Senior Executive Institute at the University of Virginia, where he's a practitioner lecturer on these topics. So if you enroll in that great program from ICMA, you'll have a chance to see Mike and his colleagues in action with that. And I'm Don Maruska. I'm the director of the ICMA Coaching Program, Master Certified Coach, and I produce and moderate these sessions, and I'm always delighted to work with all of you on these topics. So we're going to go to a polling question. We always like to know how many of you are participating at your locations. We really encourage group learning. We find if two or more people join at an organization in these sessions, the adoption and implementation of the ideas goes up geometrically, so we encourage that. And we are always seeking to provide in the agenda packets a robust set of materials and examples and resources that you can tap in your organization so that you don't have to start from scratch. You can start with things that are coming from others and that you might be able to apply in your own circumstance. So while that's happening, I'll get the webcam set up for Jay. And we'll take a look here in a moment. Again, we encourage you, if you're looking for those agenda materials, you'll see them right in the handouts. You can download from GoToWebinar, or we'll be providing with a follow-up email the link to all the resources that are on the website on this topic. So let's just see how it turned out here on our audience. And so it looks like about three quarters of you are there on your own, and others in groups up to about 20 in size. So appreciate everyone's participation today, and we're going to do our best to make sure it's of value to all of you as we go forward. So let me get the controls over to Jay here. And Jay Stegmaier, welcome to the webinar. Thank you for all your preparation for today's session.
Thank you, Don. It's good to be here with everyone. And as Don indicated, we're going to talk today about whether your culture, the culture of your organization, is what you need to get through the next major recession or other event that might want to disrupt your operations. So we'll talk about how do you determine what is your current culture? Do you have clarity of values and vision within your organization? Do you recognize and address variations in the culture across the organization? And do you personally demonstrate commitment to the organization's vision and values? So about 10 years ago, local governments across the country were caught in a historic economic upheaval and faced a major change of fortune. 10 years of revenue growth and service growth were about to be replaced with a period of severe contraction of local property values. And in many cases, the balance of intergovernmental financial interdependence shifted dramatically as states cut funding to local governments and shifted responsibilities to them. The results across the country were often devastating for localities. The Commonwealth of Virginia was so adept at rebalancing toward the end of the recession and commenting on this, at a Chamber of Commerce meeting, I mentioned that Chesterfield County had cut more positions out of its workforce of less than 4,000 than the Commonwealth of Virginia had cut out of its staff of over 100,000. That comment was pounced on by the media, and I soon received a call from PolitiFact, the political fact-checking organization, and the writers were convinced that they had come across a whopper of a fib. However, I never would have made that kind of a statement if I didn't have complete confidence in our staff to get it right. And to make a long story short, after weeks of intensive searching to try to disprove the statement, PolitiFact ran a story verifying its accuracy and fairness. So entering that recession, Chesterfield had already had a long history of building a culture of excellence and public service. We had longitudinal data on employee engagement and citizen satisfaction, and systems in place to constantly push improvement in the measures. We worked hard to make vision, values, and ethics more than just words on paper. We knew in our guts that we could only succeed if we first succeeded at empowering our employees and giving them the tools and the growth opportunities that they needed and wanted, so that at the end of the day, they could go home feeling proud of what they personally had done to make our community a better place. And at the heart of it all, we truly believed that getting government right in the 21st century would be the key to preserving quality of life and building a better version of government of the people, by the people, for the people. At the end of the recession, we had maintained or improved our critical success measures, preserved critical services, and had reduced our cost and staffing to 1992 levels, even though, like most local governments, our portfolio was much broader than it had been 20 years earlier. So now would be a good time to ask yourself the question, does our organization have in place the culture and the supporting tools that will enable us to thrive even in the event of another significant economic downturn? You need to know the characteristics of your current culture. So to help you answer that question, I have a couple other questions for you to think about. A good first question would be, what does it feel like to work here? Another question that I really like is, would you recommend this organization to your best friend as a great place to work? Whether or not you're aware of it, every organization has a workplace culture, if not an assortment of cultures. That culture reflects the vision, values, and ethics of the organization, how leaders communicate, celebrate, decide, and evaluate, what kind of people are hired, promoted, and retained, and how systems and procedures are structured, used, and changed. And this list is just a start. You may see other factors that are critical in your organization that you could add to the list. That said, our experience strongly supports the idea that it's tough to get everything else right until you know your vision and values. And when it comes to vision and values, employees are like finely tuned lab instruments that can detect contaminants at tiny levels of parts per billion. Leaders who wander from stated values risk a significant loss of trust and commitment. And that means that the leaders must fully internalize and commit to the vision and values. For that reason, we found it valuable to invest heavily in a structured process to build our vision and values. And there were two important steps we used in this process. The first involved getting to know ourselves and our colleagues better. To do this, we used a couple of tools, Myers-Briggs Type Indicator and the Berkman Assessment. Now, there are dozens of tools out there that you might choose. What matters is that you pick a tool and find a qualified facilitator to guide you through the process of understanding what the results mean, both for you as an individual and for your team. So with that as background, we moved on to the process of establishing, as a team, vision and values that could win our full commitment and support. Again, we employed a skilled facilitator to lead us through our process over a full two-day offsite session. If you approach this in a fully open manner, you might be surprised at the diversity of thought that the process generates. As one example, the first time we went through the process, we had an extended conversation about whether or not achievement belonged on our list of values. The point is this: leaders must own the vision and values and be prepared to live them every day if they want employees to pay attention. And it will likely take some focused work to get your team to that point. So at this point, we thought we had a pretty good product, but we also understood that more eyes might see things in a different light. And for this reason, before finalizing our vision and values, and regularly every couple of years after our initial effort, we engaged a team of what we called emerging leaders from across the organization to review and adjust the product. This process both improved the product and provided a development opportunity for a team of future leaders. The beauty of successfully completing this much of the culture building process is that what you now have is a yardstick, which allows you to measure everything else that you do to build and promote your culture. Are your HR policies consistent with your vision and values? Are your investments in employee training and development consistent with your vision and values? Are you treating each other, your customers, your elected officials, all of your stakeholders, consistent with your vision and values? I'd like now to share some thoughts on how you move from the foundation we've been building to embedding culture throughout your organization. In doing so, I want to revisit something I mentioned in passing at the beginning. You currently have a culture or cultures in your organization. The or cultures part is meaningful because I suspect that across your organization, there are some units where the culture is close to your ideal and some where it may be divergent. One thing we learned quickly is that you can use a variation to your advantage. Similarly, you'll find a wide variation among employees, both in terms of how close they align with your organization's desired values and in terms of how willing they are to adopt the values. You can look at this distribution of work units and individuals as a normal distribution or a bell curve. On the right-hand tail of the curve, you have work units that are already operating in accordance with the vision and regularly demonstrating behavior consistent with the values. You'll also find on this tail individuals, some of whom work in units that might be located on the other side of the curve, who are like racehorses at a gate, ready and willing to run with vision and values that they find immediately inspiring. And on the other tail of the curve, you'll find departments that are likely led by individuals who see your efforts as the latest plan du jour, something that will come and go away soon. I often found these individuals fond of animal metaphors, like, I'd like to help Jay, but I'm up to my armpits in alligators here. Or I'll get on this culture building thing as soon as we get our ducks in a row. Well, it's a good idea to pay attention to those kind of comments. And it's especially good to look at the concerns of middle managers in those kinds of departments. This is because in today's world, it's hard to imagine a workplace culture that isn't going to focus on and address the value of listening to, engaging, and empowering frontline employees. And those things can sound threatening to a middle manager who hasn't been adequately prepared for a role as coach, mentor, and leader. Finally, this is where you find employees whose first reaction is right when pigs fly. Now, these folks generally fall into at least one of two groups. The first is the individual who's seen it all before, the promises, the expectations, the dreams that things would change, only to be disappointed in the end when nothing actually does change. The other is the person who feels like they have always worked in an organization where the culture felt like its values were check your brain at the door, don't ask questions, and do what you're told. And if you ever got outside those values, your name went in a little book. Going back to the bell curve for a moment, it's obvious that most of the organization is piled up in the middle of the curve. Your job as a leader is to make sure as many of these people as possible start to feel that the change is real and jump to the right side of the curve. There are a couple of secret strategies that we found would help in this effort to move things forward quickly. The first is an animal metaphor for those who are building a positive workplace culture. I first heard this metaphor back in the days when consuming meat was less controversial, when a mentor told me, Jay, you need to start by eating the slow fat bunnies, which is another way of saying pick the low hanging fruit. So what are the quick and easy things that you can do right now to to send a signal to your organization that you're serious about changing the culture. Assign a work team to work on a problematic policy. Stop by the parks maintenance facility on your way to work. Engage a group of emerging leaders, inviting them to maybe a working lunch in your conference room to talk about their perspectives on workplace culture, and then offer them a chance to attend a leadership development program. When one of these efforts results in a positive change, or you catch someone else in the organization following your lead, celebrate success in a big way and very publicly. People will notice. Then, when you have a chance to take on a tougher issue that might reflect the values of the organization, risk everything to get it right. I'll give you a couple of examples. Early in my tenure as county administrator, we got the results of an organization climate assessment that showed that our employees were losing confidence in the ethics of leadership. And at first, we thought this was just a reaction to a change we had made in long-term, to try to reduce long-term unfunded liabilities related to post-employment healthcare benefits. And we thought the employees were upset about that. But nonetheless, we followed our practice, set up teams to go learn more and identify options for improving in the area. And what we found surprised us. Our employees felt strongly that the organization was very conflict averse and that leaders were not dealing strongly enough with situations that involved compromises of values and ethics. So while we were working on this, we had a longtime valued employee who crossed a serious ethical line. I met with our employee relations staff and asked first, how would the organization typically handle such a case? And they indicated that maybe there would be a letter to the employee's file and perhaps a short suspension, and that would be consistent with past practice. Then I asked the same employee relations staff, what should we do? And there was a long moment of silence during which they were kind of searching each other for an answer. And finally, one of them stepped up and said, the employee should be terminated. But they said, if you do that, you will definitely get a grievance and probably a lawsuit. Well, we did the right thing, successfully defended the decision, and established a new standard, and people noticed. At the same time, our board in this tough time of recession and budget cuts decided that employee training was expendable. And I thought employee training was critical and that our culture and values demanded that we show employees how we value them. We'd spent many years developing a award-winning program that was recognized by Training Magazine as a leader, along with household names like Capital One and Best Buy. I had to go to the mat to defend that program and did. And again, people noticed. A few years later, one of those same board members mentioned to me that she'd never gotten a complaint about a county employee. And I said, and that is why training was so important. So I want to close this with a little story about the inspired employee versus the manager who dances around in an effort to delay. And I want to preface the story with a lesson I learned over 25 years ago during my first visit to the Senior Executive Institute at the University of Virginia. The lesson is this: values and ethics in particular always trump past performance in the long run. It took a long time for me to fully experience and appreciate the meaning and worth of this lesson. If you have an experienced manager in your organization who's generally been reliable and gotten the job done, but doesn't seem to fit with the organization's vision and cultures, make it clear that you expect them to change. Offer them help to change. And if they can't or won't, then it's up to you to make the change. And do it as gently, but as firmly as you need to. You won't regret it. Bad news never gets better with age, and people will notice. So I want to tell you about a couple of associates I'll call Mike and Mary. Mike was a long-term department director who was one of those steady, reliable managers who he liked the old way of doing things. He led a large department, and I knew I needed his support to get the culture we wanted. So one day I left my office, went down the stairs to Mike's office and spent a good time there talking about how inspired I was about the team, what the team had been working on to take our organization to an even higher level of excellence and employee engagement and customer satisfaction. And Mike replied with the animal metaphors. I asked him, could he free up a couple of people to put through a train the trainer program to help us share the story? Nope, he was up to his armpits in alligators. So I left his office and not sure what my next step was going to be at the time. And no sooner did I get back to my office than the phone rings. And it was Mary. And you see, Mary was Mike's admin assistant. And after exchanging greetings, Mary says, Jay, I couldn't help overhearing what you and Mike were discussing. And I really believe in what you're trying to do. And I'd like to go to that class and become a trainer. I really appreciate that, Mary, was my response. And I also realize how stressed and spread thin you are. And her response to me still brings tears to my eyes. Jay, you need to let me worry about how I get my work done. I can do my job. I want to be a part of this thing, a part of something bigger than my job. You give me a chance, and I'll make you proud. Well, I realized then and there that we could get more done with 10 inspired Marys than we could with 100 Mikes. And you can too. Set your course, back it with action and celebration. Find the Marys in your organization and let them run. People are going to notice, and you can be a hero. So there's the summary in front of you. Again, I appreciate the opportunity to share these thoughts with you and my experience and wish you all the best of luck as you approach changing your cultures.
Great. Thanks so much, Jay. Outstanding information for us here today. And I want to, you've heard a number of very helpful ideas from Jay. I want to give you as the audience a chance to highlight and click off as many of the items in this poll as you think your agency would benefit from to boost your workplace culture. Where do you see some opportunities for leverage and some ways to improve? We've got a bunch of questions that have come in. I want to get to those in a moment. Before I do, I just want to highlight that Jay's been very kind and provided a whole list of resources. They're in the agenda packet. At the back of the agenda packet, you'll find a set of resources. There's a page of resources from Jay. There's also a PDF of the Chesterfield employee program, so that you can get a feel for that and see what that's like and how that works. So Jay, a couple of questions have come in. Did you conduct this vision value session with admin staff only, or did it include elected officials? How did you cascade this through the organization?
Well, of course, this was an ongoing process over a number of years. Initially, it was what we call the leadership team of the organization. So county administrator, key staff people, and deputy administrators. And I think it's really an excellent question because there is a lot of discussion about whether you do something like this on a community basis or on an organization basis, and there's value in both of them. So we had a comprehensive community plan that had a similar work behind it in terms of vision for the community. But this, we were interested primarily in the organization of the culture. So it was more of an internal effort.
Okay. And we can see from the responses here that people see a lot of motivating opportunities, especially around celebrating success and addressing the needs for change in an effective way, as well as the other key items that you highlighted. One quick question just before we move on, and that is, were there What were the responses of employees to completing these initial assessments about their personal profiles? Just a quick answer to that before we move on.
It was threatening to some people. I guess that there's some things that you decide you're going to do. Now, we did not put the entire organization through those profiles. And that was the just leadership, people in leadership positions that went through those profiles. But we felt like it was really critical if we were going to get to a higher level of work in the culture. And it certainly did pay off. And there's a lot that comes out when you sit down and discuss the results of a profile like that.
Okay, great. Thank you very much. And again, we'll cover at the end of the session where you can find all these resources that Jay and I have been referring to. And we want to turn now to Fran Robustelli. Fran, we're so delighted to have you from the City of Walnut Creek, Assistant City Manager, and talking with us about the CARE program and how that's worked for you.
Well, thank you, Don, and thank you all who are listening today. Welcome, and good morning, good afternoon. I am extremely pleased today to share a story with you that I hope you all take to heart and bring back to your own organizations. And this is so I was pleased to see that about 60% of you thought you should measure your organizational culture, because how do you know you have a problem? Well, I think as leaders, we intuitively sit and think and observe and may see that there's a problem, but we have a hard time articulating it in a form of a data sense. And this was the case for Walnut Creek about 5 years ago, coming out of the recession, as all of us were. And our city manager recognized that it was important to work fast and address the issue, especially since the employees had been feeling devalued. They had experienced years of takeaways and flat wages, and really absorbing the reality of shifting from a longstanding pay philosophy the city had had of 75th percentile in the marketplace to away from that. And that was a really hard reality for the employees to start to think about and feel valued. And if you, all of you have read leadership books, read statistics, and you know that pay and wage are not the number one retention factor to keep employees. And even more importantly, there are statistics that show up to 70% of the reason people leave is their direct supervisor. And so these are powerful points I'll be linking back to as we talk about this program. And so we did measure, and we used an outside organization, third party, to come in and do a baseline measurement for the organization. This is on a percentile scale, and you can see out of 100 points, not so good. On this particular measurement tool, if you reach the 66th percentile, you're doing pretty well. But we were still very far from that. And on the left-hand side, you can see we're measuring organizational engagement. And on the right-hand side, we're measuring engagement with the manager. And so from an organizational perspective, culture of engagement was measuring whether we were motivating and empowering and respecting our employees. And from a strategic alignment perspective, we were measuring, did employees know where the organization was headed and did they understand how they fit into that fabric? On the management side, you can see there's motivating and relating, which was measuring, do managers motivate their employees to give their best? Are they building strong interpersonal relationships? And are they building strong, cohesive teams? And on the managing execution piece, they were measuring whether managers were defining expectations, holding employees accountable consistently, and focusing on what the results were. And so you can see we had a lot of work to do, which was the exciting part about this.
And we're going to jump in with a polling question here to see how many of you are using tools like employee engagement measures to see where you're at and what your thoughts are about that. So here's the polling question up and an opportunity for you to comment about it. How are you measuring, and what's the interest of your organization in measuring and learning how it's doing and where the pockets might be? I thought an interesting thing that came out of what Jay was saying, Fran, and maybe you could comment on it, is, you know, since 70% of why people leave or why they get disenchanted is because of the manager that they report to, did you find a similar thing in your organization where there were pockets of higher performance and pockets of lower performance? In other words, quite a bit of variability. So if you felt like, oh, our organization overall is doing quite well, you nonetheless have, you know, places where the reality is very different for people?
Definitely. The beauty of this tool was we could measure by all the way down to by division manager. And we chose to do it by department. So we were empowering the department heads to take the leadership in their own departments, address it with their own style of leadership. But we definitely had ranges of scores. And we not only tackle this engagement initiative at the organizational level, but each department actually takes on their own initiatives to make sure they're customizing it to their own business needs.
Okay, great. Thanks. And we can see from the polling results here that about 20% have gone about doing this and implementing the results, and others are at different places along the path to considering that. And about a quarter that find that's not a priority in their organization. Maybe some of those attitudes will change as we go through the session here, but glad that everyone's candid in their responses, and you have a chance to see how you stack up relative to others in local government. So let's proceed and hear the story about what you did.
Okay, so I labeled this slide changing the conversation. And so you can see our management scores were relatively low. And really, when I started this initiative, I didn't have a budget. So kind of sat back and thought, what can be something we can do that's relatively inexpensive, is only going to take a time investment, is not going to take a dollar investment, and would directly affect every employee in the organization. And so we started with a soft launch of what we called a career conversation exercise. And we developed a goal for the entire organization that every employee would have a career conversation completed within a 12-month period. Sorry, my slides went too far. Hold on. So in addition to that, we developed in-house a holistic engagement program that had three prongs to it: career development, community engagement, and health and wellness. And this really was meant to take a holistic view to show the employees, we heard you, we understand we have work to do. And this program includes dozens of initiatives that were meant to really make there be something available for everyone. That our intention was to touch every employee in some way during that first year as we were implementing initiatives to improve our engagement scores. Today I'm going to focus on the coaching program, but this was an important piece of it because, again, we didn't spend any money developing this program. We did it in-house with the talent we had and had phenomenal results. As you'll see, our first year out of the engagement scores went up significantly. And so the question you're going to have to ask yourself, since I'm focusing on coaching today and performance evaluations, is, are you ready to move from traditional to transformational? And what I mean by that is moving away from this exercise of check the box, rate your employees 1 through 5, meet, succeed. So you're essentially labeling them instead of investing in a coaching process that really focuses less on documentation and making sure that everyone has a rating and knows where they stand from that perspective, and more on people and being relational, including a focus on the conversation. And so this is a model of our coaching for excellence process that we developed. And For this particular initiative within the program, we didn't start this until start implementing this until 2017. And so I'm about two years into that program by then. I had gotten such good results on the engagement survey that I was able to secure funding for the CARE program with the city manager and the city council. And so this part of the development of the program cost us about $40,000 to create all the development, the training content, and to actually roll it out to the entire organization, all of our non-public safety part of the organization. And to caveat that, we're in the midst of implementing with our police department right now the same program. And so we made sure to address some need for structure. If you can see on the left-hand side of this slide, that there is still the element of probationary employment, and it does tend to be more intense, and you are managing differently to make sure you're getting the employee up to speed. And so this organization had a great program already in place, and we didn't change anything about it. And so I think that gave some resolve to the management team that there was some things they could hold on to traditionally that felt right, but we were also at the same time transforming completely how they were going to build that longer term relationship with the employee. And so the model of coaching, we moved into a career conversation annually, which included also goal setting. And then as you can see here, at minimum, each manager and supervisor has at least a quarterly coach-in with the employee. And the fundamental shift was, instead of talking retrospective of what you accomplished, the conversations are supposed to be prospective in helping the employee reach their goals, meet their career goals, support them, and really looking how you're going to resource them through that process. And so you'll hear some themes, I think, today from the three of us on how you roll out all change management initiatives. And this, at the end of the day, this is really what that was. And so to me, there's three elements. One is using piloting to make any change management successful. I had one department that stepped up to the plate and said, we're excited about this. We're ready. We're resourced to do it. And so we piloted with that department to get all the kinks out of the system. And then we had a natural champion within the organization coming out of the training, coming out of the development of the technology saying, you know, this works. And so that was great because we have about 365 FTE. So we're kind of mid-sized agency. So it's, doing it in phases really helped. Measurement, I'm going to talk about, but, you know, what gets measured gets done, what gets measured gets funded. And so I just think making sure that that's an element that you can actually produce will help any initiative you're going to do on this side successful. And then lastly, we had a coaching committee put together that was cross-functional. Different departments came forward to represent how we were going to roll this out. There are some nuances on this rollout in public works versus community and economic development. There's very different work delivery. The ratio of direct reports is maybe higher in one unit than another. And so we were really trying to help the manager see how this wasn't going to be more work. This was going to be better and the same as far as time commitment. And so you can see here, I just wanted to give you a quick visual. It's not super easy to read, but to the left, you know, you have your traditional competencies, which, you know, government loves these, put everybody in the same box. Let's check and see, you know, if you're a meet, you're great at it. We've moved completely away from that. And you can see on the right-hand side, our quarterly coaching check-in form is free-flowing. It's meant to be text only. It's set up for goals. And the check-in on the top is really about capturing what kind of support and things that the supervisor and the employee are going to accomplish together in the next 90 days that help move the initiatives forward and invest in the employee to help them do an excellent job. So from a training content, and I can't stress this enough, to support any kind of program like this, you're going to need some training. Coaching is not an easy skill set, and most of us are not innately talented at it. And we have the tools, it's just delivery is difficult. And so we set up an intensive 3-day training for all of our managers and supervisors. They're all required to take it at least once. And then what was really unique about this program is we set up a 1-day training for all the coaches. So every employee in the city went through a 1-day training on how do you receive feedback? How do I ask for resources? How do I start this conversation with my manager or supervisor? And so to me, that became one of the most powerful tools. Our skills, we used a consultant to develop this, as I mentioned, Claire Laughlin from MRG Consulting, who is a brilliant deliverer of how to coach people. She worked closely with me on developing content, making sure that it met what we needed to actually capture these powerful conversations. They emphasized a grow model, SMART goals, building a culture of accountability, and making sure that that people knew what skills they already had, giving them new skills, and reshaping the way they may have used things in the past. And really, at the end of the day, to sum this up, we went from a listening approach with employees versus a telling and a supporting employees instead of directing. And so with anything like this, just as important as getting buy-in on the startup, it takes maintenance, it takes care and feeding. The engagement surveys are providing the measurement tool to make sure that we are still hitting the mark or that we're still growing and doing, and that the investment is worth it. But we also put in place a maintenance program that's costing us about $13,000 a year to essentially offer in-person training for our new managers. You know, we all have turnover we're managing, as well as new employees get the 1-day training. We've also implemented an e-learning tool that we've developed along with Claire to provide real-time on-training sessions. And then we do training sessions, practice sessions for our coaches that they can come together a few times a year and talk about some of the more difficult or the more successful sessions they've had. And so this is becoming, this is part of how you ingrain it in your culture because you're having a touch point quite frequently. So now to the fun part. So how did we measure? Well, the whole entire engagement survey, we came together and decided we needed some measurements, and we focused on a community survey that the city has done in the past, about every 5 years. So we had some data to show, is the community happy with the delivery of services and the way they're being delivered? Because it's, you know, I fundamentally believe our employees are our best resource. We are service organizations, and if they are engaged, our community will benefit from that engagement. We also had the engagement survey, and then I'm also tracking retention. So am I able to retain employees despite not being the best paid, you know, trying to stay competitive in the market, but are we fostering a culture that's going to ensure that that's not the reason they're leaving? And so here you can see the scores are in. I have 5 years of data here. I started off in 2015 with an overall 44th percentile. And I mentioned earlier, the first year, we had a 10-point spike. So just from implementing the CARE program, which was the comprehensive branded engagement program that brought several initiatives together, putting in place career conversations, we saw, you know, to me, a pretty significant shift. Now, you see here, and we hold tight for a year. 2017, we decide we've got the resources now to start development of the coaching program. We start to implement it. And 2 years later, we're up another 5 points overall. And you're going to see even more dramatic results on the management side. But I wanted to share with you just overall engagement. We've seen a 34% increase in 5 years. And so here's where the numbers get pretty convincing, and I hope all of you go away super excited to do this in your organization. So you can see here, this is on the manager side. where I'm only looking at management scores, we're scoring in the 40th and 37th percentile in 2015. We go up in 2016. You can see we're kind of holding tight, a little bit slippage in 2017 as we're developing the program. And then 2 years later, so we're in full implementation, and we have literally jumped 31% in the 2 years from 2017 to 2019. And if you look at the 5-year jump on engagement scores with the manager, we have a 78% increase. That to me is very compelling data that this program mattered. I'm also looking at turnover data, and I know you're all struggling with probably the same unemployment, lack of unemployment, but while it's great, we actually have a lack of talent in the marketplace, and Walnut Creek is in the San Francisco Bay Area, so we are literally in one of the most competitive job markets in the nation. And as you can see, we are holding, my general feeling is if you're under 10% turnover, you're running, you don't have a red flag on the play. So you can see here, we are holding very competitively on retention, despite having being in the most competitive job market with many other challenges that are going on in the Bay Area. So to me, this is also pretty compelling. And then last, for just from a, council perspective, community perspective, I mentioned we do the community survey results. And you could say, well, it doesn't look that great, Fran, but let me walk you through it. So in 2007, you can see our numbers were high. This is pre-recession. So we've got to weather the recession. We come out of it in 2012. Now, these scores are pretty high for a community, even at 80%, 81%. The community supports the city, and they have been just really well, really, really engaged community. And you can see we're coming out of the recession. We totally expect this response from the community. Services have gone down just by sheer cuts in the organization. And then you see as we approach 2017, we're starting to gain some ground with the community. The numbers are trending back up. And I'm really excited because we're about to go out for another community survey. So I am tracking these numbers to make sure that they are tying back together and that we have a story to tell, not only to the organization, but to the council. And so I hope the question of this is 100% yes. Are you ready to implement? And if you are, I just had a few kind of takeaways for you to think about. And these, again, I think you'll hear some overlapping themes today that, any change management initiative might follow this checklist to some degree. And so I think, the number one thing is you're going to need a change agent in your organization to help you get this through. And I would suggest that it is your city manager or county administrator and that they have passion and perseverance behind this because it will take time and it takes a lot of investment, but it's worth it. I think too, exploring the feasibility with the executive team on the elimination of your current evaluation system and what would an overhaul look like and what would they hope to get out of it. We spent a lot of time together as an executive leadership team creating a vision, and that they were really excited about it because I don't think I haven't met anyone that loved the old system. And actually, if you talk to people in this organization, they really enjoy this new system. And then again, start small. You don't have to do wholesale overhauls. These are, if everyone in all government would start the career conversation, you would be amazed at how much of a shift you would see. When we rolled this out, I had dozens of employees come to me and say, "This is awesome. In my entire career, no supervisor has ever asked me what I want to do in 3 to 5 years." And you'd be amazed how sometimes we just forget. We forget that those are important questions to ask. Again, cross-functional committees, and I put in here, don't forget labor. Labor needs to have early buy-in. I think all of you will be surprised if you sit down with your labor leadership and ask them, do they love the current performance evaluation system? They will tell you they despise it as much as you do. And so I think if you invite that conversation, you'll be pleasantly surprised at how willing they will be to get on board with you. Again, securing subject matter experts. Of course, this is all in the employment world. You have tons of questions of, well, what if we have a poor performer? What are we going to do? And so I put in here, don't forget your legal department. We brought them on early. They reviewed everything we did. And that really prevented me from getting so far down the road. And then the city attorney saying, well, wait a second, how are we going to defend any employment litigation against the city? Obviously, if you do take this path, secure training, even if you could not change your performance evaluation system, if you had the resources to do this coaching program, you would see phenomenal results just inherently. And so I would encourage you, if you feel stymied by the thought of having to unravel memorandums of understanding or the meet and confer process, that at the end of the day, the coaching program alone would be instrumental in shifting your culture. And then again, I'm a big fan of piloting. And I think that's it for me.
Okay. Thank you so much. An inspiring story. You can make a difference and you can change what's happening. So let's see what our audience thinks about this. Maybe some people are already doing it. Maybe others are wondering about it. And while that's happening, let's cover a few questions that came up. There were a couple questions that came in particular about, you know, the traditional performance evaluation has these quantifiable numbers and such, to which people do to, they say, because it will reduce bias in the evaluator. How did you address that, and how did you figure out pay for people based without those kinds of quantitative measures and with a more coaching model? Just some quick responses, if you could.
Yeah, so quickly on the bias, I think you're really focusing on results. I always say focus, manage results, care about your people. And so if you focus on the results and the goal setting, I think you get away from that bias. On the rating scale, Walnut Creek does not have a direct tie to the number rating and your merit increase. So we were able to put in place that if you had a meritorious increase and your coaching reviews were complete, that you were eligible. If you did not have a meritorious increase, your coaching content would be indicating that. And there's a whole nother process once we get where the individual is really asked to work with human resources on a different track of performance improvement plans and documenting why people are not getting raises.
Okay. Well, we can see from the survey results here that only a few organizations attending are doing something akin to this. A lot of people think it's attractive, and some are wondering, oh my gosh, how can we possibly do it? More work to be done, more things to be analyzed here. There's a couple things that we've done that I want to highlight for you to help you along these lines. Cal ICMA has undertaken over the last 3 years a talent initiative, that has generated a tremendous amount of insights into how to retool local government culture. You'll see that in this report. Here's the link. But what I particularly want to do is to highlight that there are dozens and dozens of programs like the one that Fran just shared with you in this compendium. So if you go to this website location, you click on compendium, you go down and you look at development of employees, you'll be able to click on a link to 100 pages of background material, resources, et cetera, from Fran's very own program, as well as dozens of other programs. So I want to highlight to you that these resources are available to help you accelerate your efforts. And if it sounds attractive and you're wondering how to navigate through and how you would make it all happen, take a look at those resources and see what they could do to help you be successful in this. So we're going to move off of this topic and on to another here. And we're so delighted that Mike Sable is with us. Mike, thanks for joining us. Thank you for joining the Senior Executive Institute. at the University of Virginia. Maybe members of our audience will be aspiring to come and attend your program there.
Well, thanks so much for having me. I'm excited to kind of talk about this topic. Hennepin County is a huge entity with 9,400 employees and 6,000 work in an office setting. And early on, they decided to do a headquarters expansion, and we were going to have to move nearly half of the office workforce. And this is a pretty typical problem in local government. You are going to be asked to do more with less. And so you're going to have to continue to do all of the work you were doing and then add on this other. So what we've sort of realized that, it's not the size of an agency that sort of blocks you. It's almost the operation itself. And so one of the things that we, when you're faced with this sort of new challenge, this, do more with less kind of mentality, is it's really an opportunity to sort of step away from the crank and get off of autopilot and actually kind of look at your habits. And so some of the things of what is your organization doing? And so one of the things that we did early on facing this kind of this big challenge was to really explore what it is that we do and did and how is it working for us? Because we knew that if your workload was going to jump significantly and you weren't going to get additional resources to help you, you had to sort of rethink kind of how you worked. And it really gave us an opportunity to sort of examine what it is and why we did. And so, one of the things that we tried to do early on was to sort of identify what are some of these tools and things that we could use. And so one of the things that we borrowed and stole from, for the lack of a better word, was this concept of a hot wash. Emergency management folks and public safety folks are really good at, when there's an incident, that they break it apart and they go through each phase and they say, well, how did the phone call come in, and how did we deploy? Did we run into anything that we need to be prepared for next time? And so one of the things that I would often recommend is you're looking at your sort of traditional way of operating and your own culture and how you meet, is to actually take it apart and say, if you have a weekly staff meeting, that you take time to actually say, why are we still meeting this way? Are we meeting effectively? Are we having the kind of robust dialogue that we actually need to get decisions made? The other thing I often, when you kind of can step back, I started to look at how are people behaving in the meeting? Were they staying quiet and taking notes and not engaging? Were they sitting there with arms crossed? What was the body language like? You can really learn a lot from how a meeting runs if you can sort of gauge the perspective of the people in the room. And so I always joke that, how you sit into a meeting room gives a good indicator of the culture and of whether or not it's a collaborative group or whether it's a siloed group. And you can often tell, not even from the language, but just from reading the body cues that people have. And so one of the things that I encourage folks to do is to sort of identify and kind of play in that role of terms of identifying what are the habits that exist in your own organizations and how might they do that. So some practical things that you can do. One of the tools that we will provide later is we train some folks in kind of this lean office value stream mapping tool. The state of Minnesota offers every organization in the state a free sort of online course or in-person course. And so you can actually take apart and say, are our processes working? Are our systems delivering the results that we need? How do we adapt next time? So if you have a really productive meeting, capture those elements about what went well, document them, and then try to apply them. So this is, putting some real rigor into evaluating kind of how you work. So it's sort of interesting. You don't have to do it every meeting, but if you set aside a deliberate every month, every quarter of evaluating whether or not what it is that we're doing makes sense, I think you can get some pretty radical improvement in how you meet, which really shortens the meeting times, which gives people more time to do sort of the productive things that they are actually tasked with doing. I did give some resources in here. For folks who are ICMA members, you may remember Amy Cuddy was a keynote speaker at an ICMA conference, and she talked about the power of body language and not only how you present yourself, but how you can view others and sort of gain some insight into how they are. I give some links to the Lean Office piece. I don't know that if you're out of Minnesota that it will apply, but I know that there are templates and tools and tricks that you can do. And, you know, this hot wash template really is, it can be universally applied. It could apply to, you know, does our budget intake form do the things that we want to do? You know, taking apart and really stepping away from the crank and doing the analysis about what is the things that's going to make us successful. The next thing that we had to do when you're kind of faced with these huge organizational challenges is you kind of have to determine of whether or not you're set up properly. We all work in a traditional hierarchy. It's been in existence since the sort of the mid 19th century, early 20th century. That seems to be the predominant model in workforce today. But does that actually encourage collaboration, or does it strengthen silos? And I think a lot of folks, is particularly in local government, it is around the silo. And so how do you set up a different structure that makes an opportunity for it to work for everybody? You know, so we actually set up a separate organizational structure that we call the parallel organization. And it we try to really use the John Cotter 8-step change model. You know, as Fran said, a lot of this is really around change management. And so here are some steps about, you know, creating this sense of urgency. For us, it was easy. It was, we're going to disrupt the lives of half of the workforce. And so that sense of urgency became important. But then really working to build that sort of the guiding coalition was really, really impactful for us. And so I've got links to Cotter later in the slide deck. And so for our alternative structure, we use the high performance organization model that we teach at the University of Virginia. One of the other things that we did is when you shift how you meet, we actually got the boss out of running the meeting and actually had a facilitator and a convener, somebody who could make sure that the meeting was running well, that people could, that quiet voices were invited in, that we made sure that all of the perspectives in the room were heard. You know, one of the other pieces that was really important is when you get into consensus decision making, is clearly defined how are you going to decide things. Is it going to be share information and the boss decides, or is there going to be a team vote? Is there going to be a drive towards consensus? How are we going to actually make our decisions? You know, one of the other things that I think was helpful for us in terms of reshaping culture is actually making specific relational goals part of the job description. It's not just scope and schedule and budget that matters, but it's also how are people behaving with one another? How well are they engaging with each other? Are they sharing information appropriately? And I think you can build into your job descriptions an expectation that being a good team member and sharing is part of that organizational culture. And so some of the practical tips I think that we found to be really helpful, as I said, you know, articulating how to be a good teammate became part of the expectation of the job. You know, one of the things that I asked folks to do was tell me your teammate's job and what information do they need to be successful. And I was going to do impromptu questions during meetings. So it forced people in some ways to really understand their partner and their teammate differently. One of the other things I think that was sort of interesting for us that was successful was we all know that when you're new to an organization, job shadowing becomes really important, particularly with interns and new people. We often have them shadow and learn from each other and learn from peers and coworkers. And then what we forget is that senior managers also can benefit from that kind of insight. You know, a lot of times if you've been in an organization for a long time, your assumptions about what people do or their work often gets cemented. And so this job shadowing program and this invitation to learning, people get some perspective that they wouldn't have otherwise had. The change in how people work has evolved over time. And I think people's working assumptions often stay stagnant. And for us, job shadowing and learning what another division manager might do or what another supervisor might do really opened up people's perspectives about information sharing, and it really helped cement the relationship, the importance of a good relationship with each other. And so that is a real practical tip that we enjoyed. I talked about having the importance of the team charter. I can't stress this enough, how decision-making, how you make decisions is really critically important for making sure that you're successful going forward. As you're thinking about some of the things that you can do, we call it the strategic stakeholder value analysis, but this is really a fancy way of saying, what does our customer want? What do they need from us? What do we need from them? And actually kind of documenting what those pieces are that make our relationship with our customer successful. I think Fran and Jay have talked quite a bit about establishing vision and values. For us, we did it as a team because we were smaller and we could afford to do it kind of ourselves. It was aligned with the organization, but it was done by us. And then doing some strategic planning and integrating your systems. There's nothing more frustrating than being asked to, be empowered and engaged and then run into organizational barriers. So for us, finding ways to reduce paper inputs and other things that we could make the job a little bit more streamlined. Last two things are really around people. They're people-centered, and I think Fran actually used the phrase, we're in the people business. And so this is, do you have systems for learning and thinking and changing and renewing? Does everybody have an opportunity to learn and grow? And whether that's through peer learning or whether that's through formal programs and coaching programs like this, how do you create a culture for learning? I think this is a great example for folks in their organizations that this is a wonderful opportunity. And I think that last bullet about engage and empower and enable is important. But, when you're faced with a requirement to do more with less, which we always are, who are your energizers? Who are the people that are willing to take on hard challenges to keep the team energized that, yes, we can actually do this. It seems insurmountable. It's maybe not what we had planned on, but we're fully capable of doing it. So I wouldn't discount the role of the energizers in your room. One of the things that we got out of this in this sort of this change management approach was everybody's perspective got a little bit wider. And I think that's where the real value comes in is it's not just a silo. It's not just my department. We actually serve everybody. It also created a platform for people to share their gifts and talents. This third piece about vulnerability and safety really is critical. Being vulnerable is what makes us human and makes us, when you can create a safe place for somebody to say, I don't know the answer, but I know I have a friend in another department who can help, or I don't know the answer, but I think if we work together, we can do it. Creating that space that it doesn't require you to know everything, but actually to be curious is really critical. So as you're thinking about how to change culture, think about safety as a, how do you create safe spaces for people to engage? Working together and getting better results are clearly important pieces for that. And so for us, it was sort of this new mindset gave us new results. And one of the challenges that we set for people was to say, what are the things that I can do to make the next person's job down the line easier? That question became sort of really prominent for us that it's not just I can complete my task and I can do my thing, but if I'm not making somebody else's life better or making my coworker's job a little bit easier, I'm not done yet. And so that mindset, that shift in a more holistic approach really was important and critical for our organizational change. And if you can do this, if you can encourage and ask people to articulate what do they need to do to make the next person's job down the line easier, I think that mindset will be really critical and give you some really positive results. Speaking of results, we're in an organization that used the Gallup survey every year, asked employees to do the Gallup Q12 survey. If you you can have an opportunity, it's readily available in a lot of different places. And we saw our engagement and our participation scores go up 8% almost across the board on all 12 questions. People felt that they really had a sense for how important it was to be engaged at work. They felt more empowered and more enabled. The second bullet, we talked about reducing project time by saving 3 weeks. We were an organization that did 200 to 250 capital projects every year. And so 3 weeks per project on a project manager schedule wound up saving us tens of thousands of hours that they could apply to different things, more productive things. And I think the lesson for that is the more time you spend evaluating how you work, you actually get to work a little bit faster when the time comes. And so for that was really impactful for us. And, you know, lastly, the thing that I think is really valuable for us was this psychological piece of, you know what, we really got more confident that we could deliver whenever there was a huge challenge presented for us. And that psychologically was really powerful and really important. And so, you know, less tangible than that, but you could actually feel the attitudes of the people in the department change. They were far more confident in the ability. And so when curveballs were thrown, and they are thrown quite often, we were actually able to have the confidence that we could come in and step in and deliver and answer that.
Let me just interject for a moment here, Mike.
Sure.
Because your results here are very compelling, and it's wonderful that it turned out this way. I'm curious, you know, since you had so many big challenging tasks and so few resources, oftentimes people respond in that situation with like, oh, we just have to put our heads down and keep chopping the wood here to get things done. You know, obviously to get these results, you had to get people to step back, invest more in the process, you know, put a little bit more in the front end of things. How did you manage that with them? How did you, you know, engage them to think that, okay, this would make sense versus, oh my God, you know, not only do we have to do all this work, but now we have to do all this organizational work on top of it. It's just going to take us more time.
Yeah, that is, it was really challenging because, you know, all of our reward systems are around production. They're around, you know, getting the things done as fast as you can. And so, you know, we're really good at checking things off of our list. And what happens is you get into that cycle where everything becomes an emergency, everything becomes important. And, you know, for folks who have read, you know, Stephen Covey's Seven Habits, he talks about deliberately finding time and space to do the important work, the things that are going to build productive capability later on. You know, this investment in thinking about processes and systems actually will help us do, when the time comes, to do the work differently. And so the first couple of times that we invited people to meetings to talk about it, the default answer was, well, I'm too busy. And that is, they were too busy because they were still trapped in the, you know, old mindset. And so you have to really commit to doing these kinds of organizational changes, looking at the work. And so once you finally commit to saying, you know what, at this point we're going to try to make our system faster or our processes better. And yes, it will look a little bit confusing, or it may pull you away for an hour or two. The payoff is going to be huge. And for us, it was really important to talk about what that payoff was going to be long term. And, you know, what we found is that you do it one time and it works, and people walk out and they say, well, it wasn't terrible, or, you know, that wasn't the worst thing I've ever done. And then they get invited a second time. And then what wind up happening is that people start to actually get the skill and get better at doing the evaluation piece. And so there's this kind of virtuous circle where I do some evaluation, I get a little bit better, I make some enhancements, it makes the day-to-day work easier. Well, maybe I'm going to go back and I'm going to do the next thing a little bit faster or a little bit better or a little bit easier. And so there's that kind of this dedication to improvement, and that becomes part of this shift in philosophy around, this shift in mindset around making everybody better. And so when you have people committed to making those improvements and makes the work easier, they get more encouraged to do more of it. So that it really does kind of compound on itself.
Super.
I've got some.
people to encourage others to do it because you're showing them, hey, this works and we got results. So that could help others in our audience feel emboldened to take these steps. We appreciate you.
Yeah, thank you. As a practicing academic, I have to include all of the relevant resources and templates for folks to do. So on the check out these different sources, we talk about John Cotter and David Marquet are two really great resources, but we talk about change management. But really what I'm after at the end of the day is how do we create an environment where gifted and talented people can do their best work? That is a manager's job. That is our role in the organization. And so for us, how do we do that well so people can be their best? How do we create spaces and environments where people can thrive, where they can be engaged, and where they can share what's important to them? And so that's really something that we strive for, and that's something that we are encouraged to do. And what I would suggest to everybody on the line is you have this power within you, and just encourage you to do it.
Great.
Thank you.
Well, thank you very much. And let's take a look here at a polling question. You've heard a number of suggestions from Mike. What measures do you think would make sense? Click off as many as are applicable to you in thinking about things that would help your organization be successful. And I do want to highlight that Mike was very kind to share a PDF of the application that they submitted and received an award for about this whole process. We thought it'd be easiest to just append that to the agenda packet for today's session. So if you'd like to learn more about what they did, how they did it, the sort of nuts and bolts and such, please look at the back of the, towards the end of the agenda packet, and you'll see a PDF there to help you out. And a couple questions that are coming up along the way here. Have you had any experience of doing this alternate structure work with public safety units that have highly structured organizations like police or fire?
You know, I switched phones. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Okay. So, you know, what's interesting about when I talk about the hot wash model, that's really a predominant public safety kind of feature. And what's interesting is this different structure actually applies to public safety really well. When they are on scene of a fire or of a natural disaster or an emergency, they are very hierarchical. They're running, they've practiced, they all have incident commanders, they all report to somebody. They're really good about engaging each other in the hierarchy. And what's interesting is after the event, they actually go into that alternate structure. They go into that sort of team process, and that's where they do the work. We would call it the work of leadership, where people are actually sharing their perspectives. The frontline firefighter has as much information and value as the battalion chief might on a scene. And the same thing applies in our office settings. You know, your office assistant one knows more about how stuff works as much as maybe the division manager does, just at a different level. And so for public safety, I think they do operate that way when they're doing debriefings, when they're doing planning, when they're doing training, but when they're executing, they're in the hierarchy. And so it really can be both ways, and I think really valuable to the organization when everybody sort of adopts this approach of stepping in and out of the hierarchy consistently.
Great. Thank you. Well, we can see from the polling results that people were very motivated by the idea of the coaching to enhance success, focusing on building relationships. I thought your question about asking how could you make the next person's job easier was a very compelling one, very intriguing one to get people thinking differently. And you provided very specific examples and resources for people to go do a hot wash, which sounds like kind of a fun, interesting thing to do. So thanks so much for guiding us with all those. Now we're bringing back all of our presenters, and please take yourself off of mute so that we can directing some additional questions to you while we're going forward here. I do want to highlight a couple of things. We have some post-webinar discussion questions. The most important thing out of all this is what are you going to do with the information that you've received, and how can you be applying and sharing that? And how can you be tapping all the resources that we've worked to pull together for you to help accelerate your efforts along those regards? So I also wanted to particularly highlight the resources at icma.org/coaching, the whole coaching program. And relevant to today's session, there are many things, but there are career compass columns written by Frank Bennis. And these are highly popular columns. There's three of them that particularly address the issue of retooling workplace culture. Encourage you to take a look at those. We also have a whole series of talent development tools, how to create a culture of talent development in your organization. All of these resources are free. And we have how-to guides and video clips with samples and illustrations of coaching. And so that you can see, hey, how could you visualize doing this? How could you share a video with your organization about some examples of undertaking this? And what would be helpful to you in moving forward and organizing yourselves effectively? So lots of resources here. Of course, there are many more. There's the whole Coach Connect program and one-to-one coaching that we have, et cetera. We encourage you to take advantage of all those resources. They're available online, and they're all available to you without charge. So we want to get everyone's response to how we did on the webinar in terms of meeting the objectives that were held for this, and how we click off as many of the items on this list as you found to be valuable to you, or you think would be valuable to others in your organization. In response to a question earlier that came up in the written questions here, yes, we have digitally recorded this session. We'll be providing you a link so you can share with others in your organization. That's really going to be important in helping to move things forward. So we are encouraging you to take a look at those and to take advantage of all those different resources. So let me see here. We've got a question for Fran. You've already addressed the question of pay increases. Okay, we got that one done. Some of the questions that are coming in, they're just streaming in here, so let me catch up with them here. How do you get managers to dedicate time to coaching when they're bogged down with regular meetings and other sorts of things? So this is a question, I guess, let's go to Fran for that one. How do you get people into this mindset that this is actually going to make sense and it's worth their effort? I know you've kind of introduced it with a pilot, you got some things going, but how do you get the fence sitters, as Jay would call them, to get on board with the coaching idea?
Yeah, so I think that was the concern in the beginning was, wait a second, I only have to meet once with my employee a year, and now you want me to meet at least four times. And you have to find the what's in it for everyone. And what was in it for the managers was we took away that painstaking annual write-up that we all dread and really had zero value. I hadn't met one person that found value on either side of the table, and turned it into a really streamlined checkpoint. And so as they started to introduce these meetings, which really took, depending on the position and the complexity of the goals, people are spending 15 minutes to an hour on these checkpoints with employees. And they were incorporating them with their regular meetings, maybe as an add-on. We turned them into fun events. If you talk to some of my employees, we will go for a walking meeting down to a coffee shop. And so it really started to change these conversations from being dreadful to enjoyable, and less documentation, which the supervisors really, really, really liked.
Great, great. Well, thanks. So we can see from the polling results that a lot of value came out from this session in terms of learning about ways to enhance workplace culture, seeing how to retool performance evaluations, exploring ways to restructure, and providing you with very concrete, practical resources that you can each put into place. So we're glad to have been of help to you in so many different ways. I do want to highlight our contacts for today's session and encourage you to do the post-webinar survey. Feedback is the breakfast of champions, as one of my colleagues refers to it. So we love your feedback and appreciate that about the program. And encourage you to register for the upcoming webinars. There are four more webinars in the course of the year. These are the next two coming up, and encourage you to register for all of those opportunities. So I want to turn now to just a brief of a closing word phrase from each of you. I'm just going to tee up these. We'll start with Jay. But Jay, just before you go, I thought you would be heartened that we actually got a comment in from an administrative assistant. Since you were talking about administrative assistant, Mary stepped up. But there's an administrative assistant to today's session who said, I'm going to take this forward to my city manager and tell him I want to do this program. So you inspired yet another administrative assistant to step up. So, Jay, a closing comment from you.
Well, I think, once again, you know, set your course, be visible about backing it with action, and celebrate successes, and then, like that administrative assistant, find out who they are and let them go.
Okay, great. Thank you very much. And we'll turn now to Fran. And Fran, you get a special kudos for having over 70% of the people thinking that the idea that you've got for switching from performance evaluations to a coaching model is one that excites them. That's huge. So you made a big difference today. A closing thought from you.
I would just encourage everyone to, I said this earlier, but as leadership folks, manage the outcomes and care and lead your people. And you can do that through these very meaningful, transparent, authentic conversations and building trust with your employees. And this coaching program, even if you can't get away from your form, I can't impress upon you the way your delivery will bring more enhancement than focusing just on the forms and the process. So I wish you all the best and hope everyone can implement this in their organizations.
Super. Thanks so much. And Mike Sable, you inspired us with the idea of how people can change how they're thinking to change how they work and the kinds of questions they ask of each other and the way they support each other. A closing comment from you.
I think just the closing comment for me would be that the people that we have in our organizations really want to do great work. They really want to engage, and they just want a space where they can do that and thrive. And so as leaders in organizations, if you can create that space for gifted and talented people to do their best work, you'll have made not only them better, but our communities better as well.
Hey, and this is Don Maruska on behalf of the ICMA coaching program, thanking all of you for the work that you do in local government to serve your communities. And we hope that today has been a session that has been not only practical and helpful, but inspiring to you to take the next steps in your organization and to thrive in the 21st century. Thanks so much for joining us, and let us know any way we can be helpful to you in continued success with your career. Have a great day.